What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. No guest today. Back to the regular duo.
Yeah, and we're in that little bit of a slow period in sports in general. Not a lot going on right now. So it's like the calm before the storm almost.
Pretty much. You know, we'll be getting into our preview series probably in about a month or a month and a half. So you can expect one show a week. Obviously, you want some more NBA podcasts. You got Full Access Hoops, Brooklyn Bows, JBT on the OTG Podcast Network. Be sure to check that out. iTunes, Block Talk Radio, and obviously OTGBasketball.com. But Corey, we're going to touch on first some teams that this offseason set themselves up for the future. Now, this isn't, you know, the top five young cores, but this is teams that made moves this summer that put them in great position moving forward. Who you got first?
Oddly enough, this is not, you know, it's the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah.
This is the easy choice because you got Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Now, yes, do they both have player options for the last year?
Yeah, so 3 years, and then the last year is a player option.
Right. But still, you have them for at least 3 years, possibly four. You have DeAndre Jordan. And even if you lose those guys, you have a very young team around them still, and Caris LeVert and Jared Allen, who I believe they're going to hold on to. So is Spencer Dinwiddie, locked up for a couple of years. Joe Harris is the one question mark. Maybe he goes looking into the future. But if you're the Nets right now, you have star power for the foreseeable future, and you still have young players on this team who can be on the team for further and beyond.
100%. You know, like you said, you got KD and Kyrie for the next few years, but then you still have your young pieces intact and a Caris LeVert, a Jared Allen. You made the trade for Taurean Prince, another young guy, and you maintain his rights because he's a restricted free agent. Then also, you know, they lost two picks in the Allen Crabb trade. They got two picks back this year. So they're in a really good position long-term and short-term. Obviously, Sean Marks has done a really good job the last couple of years in Brooklyn, and that looks like it's going to be the same case in the foreseeable future.
Yeah, definitely. Sean, I mean, what's the thing? In Marks we trust?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely trust him. Not to get in a Nets rant here, but you could go listen to Brooklyn Buzz if you want that. Considering where the Nets were when he took over and to where they're at now with two of the top superstars in the NBA and a real opportunity to win a championship, maybe not this upcoming season, the following season, he's done an amazing job.
For sure.
All right. Next on my list, this is another pretty much easy one, the New Orleans Pelicans.
You know, obviously, yeah, on my list too.
You got you made the Anthony Davis trade, and that was probably the best possible scenario. You got a couple picks, and you got a lot of young talent. Also, were able to turn those picks into more picks in the draft, getting a lot of guys that you like. Obviously, Zion, Jackson Hayes, Alexander. So there's just a lot of potential in New Orleans. And then David Griffin, who seems to be one of the best GMs in the NBA, back in business after a couple years off, just killing it. I think New Orleans is really looking to be a good NBA team for the next couple of years. And after that, they could be a great NBA team and a possible dynasty, depending on how a lot of these young guys turn out.
Yeah, man. I think the Pelicans are a lock for, I mean, almost like a surprise with how Griffin did this in all 3 weeks, basically, between trading AD, getting these draft picks, and then the free agency in which he was able to get JJ Redick and Derek Favors. Ton of young talent, Zion, Lonzo, Ingram, Hart. Even Hayes, I think Hayes was impressive in summer league. The Pelicans are just in a really good position for, like you said, for right now to even be competitive enough where I think they're going to be knocking on the eighth seed with Drew Holiday and company and all these young guys. You expect them to be at least competitive if they remain healthy in the West. Maybe not a playoff team this year, but definitely in the next 3 years or so, I could definitely see this team entering the playoffs while some of these young guys hopefully start to pop off.
Yeah, and I mean, they're just enough to be an annoying team this year, like you said. They'll be knocking on the eighth seed. And who knows, maybe they get really close and they move some of these young pieces and get another good player in-house. You know, they have the option because the chances of retaining all these young guys or them all turning out to be all-stars is probably unlikely. So maybe they turn that into another piece, you know, Bradley Beal or something like that's been mentioned. But I also think you like the move of bringing a guy like JJ Redick, who's been known to be a good locker room guy, a good culture guy. He really helped Philadelphia take that jump from being that tanking team to that playoff team, just bringing a different mentality. And I think that's probably being undersold a little bit this offseason.
No, definitely. JJ is going to do wonders for that. I mean, first off, they really need the floor spacing.
Yeah, they do.
So he's really going to help in that department. The guy who keeps getting better with age. But also, like you said, this is a great vet. You know, he's one of the guys who, like you mentioned, really did help that Philly team kind of mature once Embiid and Simmons were ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, and everything you know about Derek Favors kind of seems like he's a good locker room guy. Never really complained about his role in Utah, and he easily probably could have asked to be traded into a starting role, which will probably be in New Orleans.
Definitely.
Who else you got?
I know you're not going to agree with this one, but the Sacramento Kings.
Okay, sell me.
I don't even know if I can sell you, because I know you're not a fan. I mean, the contracts aren't great. So you sign Ariza, Dedmon, you re-sign Harrison Barnes, you bring in Corey Joseph. Joseph and Ariza, questionable money, but Ariza you can flip. Barnes, you're taking a risk on him being at least just 27. He can kind of develop along with De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield, which are the two guys you truly care about. You still have Bagley off the bench. You still have Harry Giles, who showed some flashes last year. So there's still a very young team looking for the foreseeable future. And then right now you have vets, Corey Joseph, Trevor Ariza, Dwayne Dedmon, who can really help mentor these guys to help them, like the Pelicans in a lot of ways, knock on that 8-seed door, maybe be a playoff team this year. And then hopefully in a couple of years, while these guys start to make their way out off the team, you have Fox, Hield and Bagley kind of taking that next step to possibly being stars. We've seen flashes from both Fox and Hield. And maybe Harrison Barnes just becomes that nice complimentary piece. Obviously, he has deep playoff experience. The contracts for some of these guys aren't great, but I don't think it's the worst thing that you still have these young guys in Hield and Fox that you're really hoping pop off.
Yeah, I think they're in an okay position. I just don't love the ceiling of the team. Like, I don't think over the next couple of years, there's any possibility for them to be like a top four seed. I think that this will help push them to a playoff team. But like you said, you know, I'm not super happy with the contract. I think if they were able to do what the Knicks did and sign a lot of guys they signed and got the team option or maybe some more non-guaranteed. I know a couple of the deals aren't fully guaranteed in the last year. The full details aren't completely out. We probably won't have that until the NBA season actually starts. But they're not in a terrible spot. I just don't know if I love a ton of their moves. I think it's good for like the short term, but long term, it's determinative the impact is going to have on retaining some of these younger players when their contract's up, because now you have, you know, Dwayne Dedmon making X amount of money. So it's a little concern. I think it is a positive push for them moving forward, but I don't see it as like a giant boost.
That's fair.
I think one team, and this is like naturally people would be like, what? You look at OKC. OKC set themselves up for the future really, really well, because not only do they have all these, like we talked about on previous shows, almost 10 plus draft picks or rights to 10 plus draft picks. They got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They have a couple young guys on the roster. They're really in that rebuild mode, but they also still have competent players on the roster where they can be a competitive team. I don't know if they'll get in the playoffs. Word is Chris Paul is going to stay in OKC for the foreseeable future until they're able to move him. Gallinari's not a bad guy. So now you have all these picks. You're just in a really good position asset-wise as an organization.
Yeah, I mean, the draft picks. I mean, that's the best place to start. They got all these picks for Westbrook and Paul George, and you still have more guys you can flip for more assets. Steven Adams, Andre Roberson, depending on what his health looks like, Dennis Schroeder possibly, Chris Paul, if there is a market out there for him, might have a package of pick or two to get rid of Chris Paul. You have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to look forward to. You still have Nerlens Noel. You got him back on cheap. So maybe, again, he starts to flourish if you move Adam to give him a bigger role. So, yeah, I mean, OKC has set themselves up for a beautiful rebuild with all these picks and the possibility to gain more assets, because they still have like Adams. I know the contract's a little bit high, but there's a lot of teams out there who could use a center like Adams who simply goes out there and does the scrappy plays.
Yeah, especially when it gets closer to, you know, the trade deadline and teams are kind of getting desperate or they think they're one piece away. And I think last year's Toronto Raptors team winning the championship is going to probably make teams a little bit aggressive moving forward in terms of trade deadline. Because if they don't win the finals without making the move for Marc Gasol, and that's something that some teams would be scared to do in the past, but it worked out for the Raptors. Even the fact that they rented Kawhi Leonard for a year and they won a championship. Championships are so rare that I think teams are going to be more aggressive around the deadline. So there's a real possibility OKC could be a winner from that.
Definitely.
Now, who else you got on your list?
I had to go with the Indiana Pacers.
Big surprise.
I know a lot of people have been questionably low on the Pacers on NBA Twitter. some people saying they're not even a playoff team next year, which is whatever. We're not going to get too much into that.
We'll talk about this real quick. This is like the worst take season of the NBA. This is where you're going to see all of the bad takes. Like, I've saw takes today about the Wizards possibly getting into the playoffs, that the Knicks are going to make the playoffs, the Nets are going to miss the playoffs. You said the Pacers. I know people have the Raptors missing the playoffs. So just like a ton of different things where it's just like, this is bad take season.
Yeah, there's not enough content out there that people have to force content, which is pretty much just their opinions and takes on power ranking standards and everything else. And some of these teams are falling. I saw the Nets out of the playoffs. So I was like, how are the Nets out of the playoffs? Like, I don't want Kyrie, relax. So the Pacers added TJ Warren, Malcolm Brogdon, Jeremy Lamb. They drafted Goga. They also got Justin Holiday today, TJ McConnell as well. I just think they're a very deep team. I think they gained 3-point shooting. They're going to miss Victor Oladipo for the first part of the year, but now looking to the future, they already plan on re-signing or extending, I should say, Domantas Sabonis. You already have Turner for the next 3 years. You still have Brogdon now for 4, and you have Oladipo for 3. So now you have a Brogdon, Oladipo, Turner, Sabonis core going forward. It's been successful to this point. Obviously, Sabonis is now going to be a starter entering this season. How does that look? Can you run a 2-big-man lineup in today's NBA with Sabonis and Turner side by side? I'm not so sure yet. Can he shoot the 3? Because he got to have floor spacing in today's NBA. I'm not sure yet. But as of right now, having these 4 guys as your core going forward, I think it's a good position to be in if you're the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah, I like the addition of Malcolm Brogdon, like you said. He fits the core, and then also a lot of the signings fit the timeline, where they're around the same age. They didn't get old guys. They didn't get super young guys. You know, you look at Brogdon, you look at TJ Warren, you look at Jeremy Lamb. These are all guys that kind of fit Indiana's timeline, and it provides them some skills in an area. Then also another underrated factor of the offseason, they really didn't overpay a lot. You know, Brogdon's probably a touch overpaid, but Lamb's a good deal. Getting Warren's contract is a good deal. These are tradable contracts where, hey, the Pacers think they're really close to maybe pushing to a top seed or maybe a championship run. They have things they can move on the roster that are attractive to other teams or movable contracts. So I think the Pacers did a good job of not screwing themselves for the future and putting them on an incline where now they have flexibility, where I think you've seen teams in this position before where they might make a rash decision, overpay a bad player, or lock up some bad contracts. They did the right moves.
Yeah.
Even if you move Sabonis, and I know you just mentioned that you're looking to extend him, but it maybe if you realize like, hey, this two big lineup won't work, now you can pair Sabonis because he's not making a lot of money this year with a couple of the other guys, and maybe you could get a big fish or a semi big fish in there.
I would be surprised, if I'm being honest with you, if Sabonis doesn't have a new contract entering next season.
That's a real possibility to get his extension over the summer. I think that there's a couple guys, him, I think Caris LeVert's another guy that you could eye for a extension over the summer. So keep an eye on some of those rookie extensions.
Yeah.
But, and also I think Goga is going to be an interesting guy. I'm really intrigued. I'm always intrigued by the international guys, how they come over in the NBA, how fast can they adapt? Because if he adapts, it almost could make it a little bit easier if you were to have to possibly move on Sabonis or even move on Turner, which I know was a couple rumors around the draft.
Yeah, Goga is definitely a safety net. I mean, does pretty much everything that Miles Turner does to a degree, maybe not to the same degree yet, especially defensively, but he's a 3-point, he can shoot, he's a face-up 5, and he can get to the rim, and he's a good rim protector. So, like, I think, like you said, it's a good safety blanket to have because arguably, and I think this, I don't think this is a hot take, but if the Pacers stumble out of the gate, even if Oladipo's not back yet and Sabonis and Turner can't coexist, one of them will be dealt at the deadline. I don't think Pritchard will sit on them trying to see if they coexist. This is like a deadline or bust type of situation, I feel.
Yeah, I agree. And I think having both guys and understanding that, hey, we're going to give it a shot to work with two bigs, but it's not guaranteed that it's going to work because you don't see that a ton in the NBA. And then you have the option, which I prefer to play TJ Warren at the 4. I think now you can slot TJ Warren at the 4, and now you're in a good position, and maybe you end up making a move for another wing or a small forward that you could put next to a Brogdon-Oladipo pair, and now your starting lineup is really lethal. And then your fifth best starter is TJ Warren, who's not a bad fifth starter if you're still keeping Miles Turner. I think I would personally look to move Sabonis because I just love Turner's fit in the current NBA with his ability defensively to get out on the perimeter and defend, and then also his ability offensively to space the floor.
Yeah, I think if you're trying to choose between those two bigs, you keep Turner for exactly what you said. He's the better defender. He can shoot the three. He, like you said, he's a better fit in the modern NBA. Whereas Sabonis, yes, probably a better rebounder, probably a much better rebounder, very good in the pick and roll. But the defense is a question mark for him, and he can't hit the three-point shot consistently. So I already think it way favors Miles Turner in that regard. And also, I mean, Sabonis is a couple of years younger, which I think could help his value as well, because there is still a ton of potential with Sabonis, like not a question about it.
Yeah, and I mean, when he was a rookie with OKC, he was shooting a lot more threes. Like, they were trying to get him to be a three-point shooter, so maybe the skill set is there. It just needs to maybe be unlocked, and that's something we could see this year. But it'll be interesting. I'm really intrigued with the Pacers, especially because the whole Oladipo situation, like, when is he going to be back? What are we going to expect from him when he's back? Because it is a serious injury. I know Oladipo has a great work ethic, especially considering where he was when he came to Indiana and where he was at when he got injured. I'm intrigued to see how that impacts the whole year.
No, definitely. It's the dark cloud that's hovering. I mean, I don't think it's as dark as it once was, because he's, you know, looking very good. He's got his own little YouTube show he's doing, kind of walking everyone through his rehab process. So everything looks good on paper. Have to see when he comes back. They're saying December to January.
Yeah, and I think as long as the Pacers can at least stay slightly or around 500 and then get him back, that's going to be a big boost not only on the court, but I think off the court, because Oladipo does have a really positive personality.
For sure.
Now, next up on my list, and I think this might surprise some people, I'm going to go with the Lakers. And that's under the thought that they're going to retain Anthony Davis, which seems like it's 100% guarantee. They trade all these assets, but they just locked up. They have one of the top five players in the league in LeBron James. Now they just guarantee they're going to have another top five player for the next 4 years, instantly making you relevant and instantly giving you the possibility of winning a championship, because we know it's highly unlikely for you to win a chip without at least having one of the top five guys if you don't have two of the top 10 guys.
Yeah, I mean, the feeling I have in regards – to this, similar to how I felt as a Colts fan when I went from Peyton Manning to Andrew Luck, it's kind of how Laker fans should feel going from LeBron to AD. Now, granted, these guys are going to be teammates, and you're going to have them together for at least 2 years, 3 years, you know, depending on LeBron resigns when his contract's up, maybe longer. But either way, like you said, you have Anthony Davis for the next decade in Los Angeles. He's a top five player, could arguably be the best player in the league when it comes down to 4 years down the line here. And that will be a guy who a lot of players will want to team up with. There isn't much bad to be said about Anthony Davis, unless you're probably a Pelicans fan and how he forced his way out. But I think majority of the players at least like Anthony Davis. So if you're the Lakers, you're sitting in one of the greatest spots you've been in the last decade.
Yeah, I mean, since you had Kobe and Gasol. Like, that's the last time you had a really good duo, and now you're back to that. And it just gives you the opportunity to compete and win a championship and get some of these guys in the cheap. I think if you're looking at it from a negative side, yeah, asset-wise, they're not in a great position in terms of first-round picks. At least they were able to keep Kyle Kuzma, who I think could turn into a really good six-man. Contract-wise, a lot of the guys aren't on long-term deals. Maybe next year a lot of them have player options. But 2021, now you're back to having a ton of cap space when there's the big free agents. And then you have LeBron on a player option that year. You could get him to opt out, and then you'd have a real lot of cap flexibility depending on what his goal was of that offseason. And you could really, like, even turn into another super team. And just, like, there's a lot of possibilities with LA. And a lot of people look at it like they traded so much for AD. Yeah, you trade that much for a player that good. He's that good that you don't care if you're giving up that many picks and assets.
And I know, like, it doesn't happen anymore, and LeBron's already obviously doesn't deserve – like, he doesn't have to take a pay cut ever again in his career. But let's say 3 years down the line here, he has the ability – or 2021, he has the ability to opt out and possibly come back, take a little bit less money, but to play with a super team of, let's say, Antetokounmpo and Anthony Davis. Like, there's just a lot of scenarios where the Lakers could be even better off depending on how things, you know, play out.
Yeah, and I think LeBron at that age might be open to taking a pay cut depending on what he's trying to do and how his off-the-court businesses are doing. We know he's been very successful with a lot of stuff. He might just be racking in the money where he's like, all right, let's get a couple more chips before I retire.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like he's the type of person who would do it. I mean, he's never been worried about you know, didn't he used to pay money for someone when they got fined in the playoffs, like Dante Jones?
Possibility. I'm not 100% sure. But I know, like, when he was in Miami, like you said, he took the pay cut. So it's not like he needs to be the highest paid guy. It doesn't really matter. He knows he's that good. And I think a lot too is, like, how LeBron does, because I think this year is going to be a slight transition for him in terms of we might see a little bit more like Magic Johnson type LeBron James, where he's not as much of as the scorer we've seen in the past. He's trying to really facilitate a lot and, you know, get the focus on Anthony Davis. And then if he brings in another star in 2021, now he does not have the pressure to be the same guy and he can play less minutes and just kind of almost have more fun.
Yeah, no, I think a Magic Johnson like LeBron is what I'm expecting this year. I really think we're going to see him as like the surgeon out there, kind of just picking apart the defense and trying to get everyone else involved and kind of being what he's always wanted to be in a lot of ways. In his interviews, he's always said how he kind of just scores a lot because he has to, but not because he likes to.
Yeah, I mean, and like we don't know how DeMarcus Cousins is going to work out, but that could be another guy where he's just hitting a big man in the paint and he's good to go to score. But you got anybody else on your list?
No, I just had those four.
I would give an honorable mention to the Clippers. Obviously, they gave up a ton of draft picks, but they still have young talent on the roster. And, you know, with Shamed, Harrell, and then also, you know, you have Paul George and Kawhi Leonard for the couple years. I know Kawhi's deal is only 2 years plus one, but there's a good chance if things go well, you'll be able to retain those guys too.
I mean, one more honorable mention would be the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah, locking up KP and Luka, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, you have two guys for the future, and you don't have you have somebody locked up at Hardaway Jr., but he comes off the books, I believe, 2 years from now. So long-term, you're still not locked into anybody besides your two stars.
Yeah, and I mean, that duo, it's not right now, but it's not a crazy thought to think that that's going to be two top 15 players, two top 10 players over the course of the next 3 years.
Yeah. I'll be shocked if 3 years from now the Mavericks aren't in the playoffs as like at least a sixth seed, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I mean, Luka has that MVP type potential, at least what we saw from his rookie year, developed that skill set a little bit farther. And, you know, you could make the same argument for KP when we last seen him in New York. I mean, he had the Knicks around 500 and that team was trash. We saw how bad they were after he got injured.
Yeah, no, definitely.
I'm a big KP fan, and I think if he comes back 100%, people are going to realize, like, oh, God, this guy was really, really that good. And Rick Carlisle will get a lot out of him, too.
Yeah, and I think the best thing, too, for him is the fact that he could have came back last season. They kept him out. He kept training, kept rehabbing. So he's probably going to be in some of the best shape of his life, hopefully, entering this upcoming season with how hard he's been working just to get back on the court to begin with.
And it already seems like him and Luka have, you know, an off-the-court relationship. And then let's remember, Dirk's going to probably be hanging around, maybe not as much this year because, you know, first year after retirement, you want to spend time with your family, do things like that. But I'm sure you'll see him around the Dallas facility a little bit more, helping those two guys hit a new level. And obviously, KP has the potential to have, I don't want to say a Dirk-like career, but there are similarities there.
I would agree.
All right, moving on from there, this is kind of on the same sort of topic. What are some potential new playoff teams this year? I think there's a couple locks right off the bat, but what are you thinking?
John, one, I have five. Let me just give you the five.
Yeah, let's go, and I'll tell you who I have too.
All right. So I have, oddly enough, the Dallas Mavericks, New Orleans Pelicans, Sacramento Kings, Atlanta Hawks, Chicago Bulls.
Okay. Well, I think you probably forgot two locks right off the bat because we'll definitely see the Los Angeles Lakers in the playoffs.
I didn't put them down because I figured they were already a lock.
Yeah. And then I have the Miami Heat as a lock, too, with Jimmy Butler.
Miami's fair as being – I actually didn't think about them not being in the playoffs last year. But, yeah, no, they should be back in now.
Yeah, I think they're right on the cusp. And, obviously, Butler's a good player. And they lost some guys, but I think they're going to be in really good shape. And Winslow and Bam, I think, are going to take another step forward. I really like Bam Adebayo. I think his skill set is, like, perfect for the new NBA. We don't really need to talk about the Lakers anymore. So I have the Kings as, I don't want to say a lock, but they're pretty close. Like, I would be very surprised if they finished anything less than, like, the 9 seed. And then, like, my spicy, they're not locks. They're just more of, like, spicy teams would be all the teams you need. Dallas, New Orleans, and Atlanta.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I feel kind of good about Chicago.
I do. I think there is something to be positive about. They finished last season a lot better than they did to start the season. And let's remember, Lauri Markkanen missed a lot of time and Wendell Carter was out pretty much his whole rookie season.
Right. And I'm interested to see how Kobe White looks. I mean, he looked good in summer league. I think Thaddeus Young is good for just the locker room in general. Like, I don't know what his role is. Does he start to come off the bench? But just having that guy around your locker room is good. He's just a hard worker, just knows how to be in the league. And then we have all these young guys, you know, you still have Porter Jr., you still have LaVine, you have Markkanen coming back. I don't think the East is overly tough at those bottom. Like, I don't think Detroit got much better. They got Derrick Rose, really, is the only thing that stands out. And Markieff Morris. Like, I just don't think Detroit did enough. Charlotte's going to be god-awful. The Knicks, some people believe in them. I don't. I just think – I think there's definitely a route for them to be – and, you know, Toronto got a little bit weaker. I think there's a route for them to be an 8 or a 7 seed.
I think I would probably have – I feel – it's tough to say because you do make a good point with Thaddeus Young being a vet. I think for me, what I'm concerned the most about Chicago is Coby White being a rookie and then the other point, Satoransky, like not being amazing point guard. I would probably lean towards Atlanta making the playoffs over Chicago if I had if you had a gun to my head.
Yeah, no, I probably would too. I think also just how Atlanta played the second half of last season.
It was fun.
Right. It was fun. A lot of those guys are coming back, you know. You lost Kent Bazemore, but I think a lot of these young guys are just going to continue to develop. And, I mean, Trae Young was phenomenal second half of last season. Really made me eat my words. And I expect him to be even better this year, Herter getting better. I like what Atlanta has. That's a team that's just going to continue to grow.
Yeah, I mean, they got DeAndre Hunter, too, in the draft, who, you know, he's kind of a good fit. Cam Reddish is a guy that I think has a lot of potential for them that they got and who just really didn't play well at Duke, but his skill set, he was kind of like the third wheel of that big trio. So maybe he has more potential there. You know, they, like you mentioned, they lost Kent Bazemore. He didn't really play. Torian Prince really didn't play a ton for them last year either. You get in Evan Turner. You get Allen Crabb. So if Allen Crabb's healthy, he actually is like an amazing fit for their system and what they're trying to do three-point-wise. And then, like you said, the young guys in Young, Kevin Herter, John Collins, there's a jump for them to make. So I think Atlanta, there's just like a lot of potential. They almost remind me similar to like a rebuilding Nets team.
In a lot of ways, yeah. I would agree with the Nets comparison. And I want to even shout out to Alex Len.
Yeah.
He kind of rejuvenized his career with Atlanta after looking like he may not be in the NBA for too long with the Phoenix Suns. He really reinvented himself and they got the most out of him.
Yeah, that was the best season of his career, in my opinion. I saw him live, too, last year. He's a big dude.
Yeah.
Like he improved his three-point shot. He knocked down a couple threes. I know he's not, like, a consistent three-point shooter, but there was games where he's knocked down, I think, at least three threes.
I mean, that's more than you can hope for from your center nowadays.
I think for them, the biggest obstacle is going to be like, all right, we scored a lot of points last year, but can we play any type of defense? Like, Can we improve our defensive level and, you know, push to the playoffs? Because that's what it comes down to, especially like the last 2 months of the season. When you're trying to fight for that spot, you need to tighten things up.
That's surely the hope with getting a wing or a guard in DeAndre Hunter, who's more of a defensive first-minded guy who could hopefully take some of the guard pressure off of Trae Young.
And they also got your boy Jabari Parker, who I like – for them and
don't hate it off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, in a player development system, a fun system where they don't ask you to play a ton of defense, he could probably have some good success, and you have a lot of spacing at the guard position to make it not as crucial for him to knock down threes, which is a weakness for him.
Yeah, I mean, if he could hit the three just, you know, 34-35% and play just an effortful amount of defense, he would be a solid six man. So I mean, his rebounding and playmaking and ability to get in the open court is still really good despite having two knee injuries. But it's the fact that he just doesn't show any effort on defense. Like you said, he's a lackluster three-point shooter.
Yeah, he has a natural scoring ability inside. Like, he has the footwork, he has the moves and the touch where it's like, okay, we can get him positioned. Like you said, it's just more so about the little things in the defense. And then we kind of already talked about Dallas. You know, I think a lot will be like, how well does KP come back and how do a lot of the pieces on the roster fit? You know, they're not necessarily an incredibly like talented team, but they do have two really talented players.
Yeah.
In terms of that,
I also want to say, like, we didn't say them and like, they're not even a lock. They're probably just like, they're probably like good Vegas odds though, like the Minnesota Timberwolves. Cause there is a scenario here, I believe, where Towns goes, you know, next level off and Wiggins just kind of shows up maybe. And this team is then knocking on the door if those two guys are at their best. But it's just you can't expect anything from Wiggins at this point in time.
Yeah, I think one thing that's really intriguing for them is, you know, they got Jared Culver in the draft. And obviously Josh Okogie had a really good rookie campaign and was a great defender. If they can get Andrew Wiggins to play some good defense and they can get Karl-Anthony Towns to finally unlock his defensive potential, which was a major selling point when he was drafted, he hasn't really shown in the NBA. It hasn't necessarily clicked for him. We know offensively he's been really dominant. Then they have Robert Covington at, you know, power forward too, and they signed Noah Vonleh. They also brought in a guy like Trevion Graham. I think there's a lot of defensive potential for this team. The one weakness I look at Minnesota is that point guard position is pretty rough with Jeff Teague and Shabazz Napier.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that as well. That's the one weak spot is the guards.
If you could get one of the, you know, the other guards, the non-point guards, the shooting guards, or the small forwards, maybe it's even Andrew Wiggins or somebody, to develop a little bit more as a playmaker, and you don't have to necessarily play your point guards, they could have some really, really good lineups defensively.
No, definitely. I mean, I like their wing depth, honestly. I mean, besides Wiggins as being kind of a liability, I think Minnesota, there's hope there. And obviously, there's a lot of rumors about them still having interest in D'Lo, maybe going after him around the deadline. And then who knows if they were to shake up the roster midseason, if they were hanging around maybe a 10 spot, if that doesn't push them over the edge to at least knock on the playoff door.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a possibility, especially if they were to get D'Angelo or even just any type of upgrade at the point guard position. You know, Jeff Teague just hasn't been that great the last couple of years. I think the last good year we probably saw him was with the Pacers.
Yeah, what do you think about the idea about Chris Paul possibly being traded to the Timberwolves? I've seen that going around the Twitter sphere.
If they're getting off Andrew Wiggins' contract, do it up. Why not? Like, it's a little bit more money than you want to play for Chris Paul, but maybe he can help change the mentality and change the tone, and you guys could finally get in the playoffs for, like, the first time in what seems like forever. I'm wrong. They made the playoffs a couple years ago and just got knocked down the first round. My bad.
If you're OKC, and hypothetical, say I offer you Andrew Wiggins to Chris Paul straight up.
Well, I think there's going to have to be some type of cap filler, because I think Wiggins probably makes around 27 to 30 million and Paul's obviously like 40 plus. I would maybe consider it. I don't know. It depends on what their viewpoint is on Andrew Wiggins. I think, like, also Minnesota has to view it in the perspective of, like, okay, we're still helping you out by taking Chris Paul's contract because we know you have no leverage in that situation and no one else is willing to take him on. Like, Minnesota could maybe get a draft pick from it too.
Right. Well, I was trying to see if there was a way that the Thunder could get Wiggins and get off Chris Paul without giving up any of their treasure chest. Probably not.
Minnesota would have to be desperate, but they could end up being a desperate team.
Fair.
I wouldn't do it, like, me personally, but Minnesota's made some questionable decisions in the past, like giving Andrew Wiggins that max contract in the first place.
So we've talked about it on this pod. Like, we're in that period of time. I'm telling you, I feel it with Towns. Like, we're in this period of time now where within the next 2 years, even though he just signed this extension, if there's not a change in culture and winning, he's going to be the next guy who demands out.
It's a possibility. I think you'd look at, you know, either them trying, they really tried to get D'Angelo Russell this summer. They just could not get the cap space open to get him. So maybe they make a strong push with Golden State and maybe throwing like Robert Covington or something, or maybe another young player, whatever it may be, getting D'Angelo. If not, I think Towns would maybe look to demand a trade. It'd be interesting to see where he demand a trade if he looked to play with one of his friends. You know, I don't think Golden State has the assets to make a move for him, but maybe Phoenix would have the assets to make a move for him and pair him up with Devin Booker.
I could see that. I mean, package Ayton.
They got a ton of young players in the
game. There's a lot of guys to pick from aside from Devin Booker.
So I wouldn't like rule it out as a possibility. And I think he's given them a fair amount of time. Like, they had the team with Jimmy Butler, but like I said, the year they made the playoffs, they just got smoked by Houston, and they only got in that one game playoff in the final game of the season against Denver.
Yeah.
And I probably would have preferred to see Denver make the playoffs that year, but whatever. That's for another day. Any other teams you think have a possibility? Do you think there's a possibility that OKC could fight for a playoff spot if they maintain the roster they have?
I don't know if they have enough shooting. I really don't think they have enough shooting. I think they're scrappy enough. I think they'd be in the hunt, but I don't think realistically they're any more than a 10 seed with that roster. I just don't see enough shooting.
Yeah, other than Gallinari, you're not really seeing a ton. I mean, they just signed Mike Muscala, but he's not going to light you up. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a decent three-point shooter. Somebody would have to take a major jump. Obviously, Chris Paul's a solid three-point shooter too, but they would need another good catch-and-shoot three. You know, probably what they envisioned Patrick Patterson to be, but he never turned out to be for them.
Yeah, I mean, the way I see it is your best three-point shooter last year was Paul George. Now your best three-point shooter is Gallinari.
Yeah. And Gallinari actually probably is probably a better natural shooter than Paul George. He's probably less streaky, where if you're going from a game-to-game basis, you feel a little bit better about Gallinari making threes than Paul George.
That's a good argument. I've definitely seen the streakiness of Paul George from three, like the 1 of 8s and the 2 for 7s.
In Gallinari, you're more likely to see like 2 of 5, 1 of 4.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely not going to force it either if he doesn't have it. He's not going to keep firing from deep, whereas Paul George kind of will just shoot because he's got that star level.
Yeah, and it was more of a natural thing that they needed Paul George to do. I'm not sure if he's like in love with playing, you know, chucking up threes, but they really had no choice but to let him chuck threes last year.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not part. He prefers to work kind of like the mid-range in and out.
But I know this wasn't initially planned, but what teams do you see dropping out of the playoffs that were in there last year?
I could see the Pistons dropping out. I would not be surprised if the Pistons fell out.
What about, let's see. I'll list all of the playoff teams because obviously it's been a quick minute since the playoffs were here. You got in the East, Milwaukee, Toronto, Philadelphia, Boston, Indiana, Brooklyn, Orlando, and Detroit.
I just see Detroit in the East. I don't see Orlando dropping out. I mean, Orlando could drop out, but I don't really see them dropping out. I see these guys kind of take another step. I think Fultz does play this year. I think he plays a somewhat important role. I don't know. I think the 8 seed, the only thing I could see changing in the East.
Early hot take, I think Jonathan Isaac's going to light it up this year. I just have a really good feeling about him. He started to really like hit his stride last year. If he can add some more muscle, keep working that three-point shot, he's already a really good defender with that length. Like, Jonathan Isaac's a guy I'm already having an eye for next season.
I mean, I would love to see him and Aaron Gordon coexist.
Yeah. I mean, like, this is what's weird about them, because there's lineups. If Isaac added the right amount of size, not saying he did, I haven't followed him like that, but you could play them at the 4-5, and that would be an ideal combo. Like, Vucevic is a really good player. He's an all-star type player. You had to retain him, but maybe down the line you look to move him and add a wing or something, and now you're able to kind of get the full fulfillment of these other young guys.
I mean, we mentioned Vucevic's contract when we saw it signed. I mean, it's a very movable contract still. It's not like he's being overpaid. He's right in the mid-20s, which is where he's probably worth it right now. Maybe even a little slight underpay for how he played last year, but a good long-term.
Yeah, especially comparison to how some other guys got. Like, he has a really good offensive skill set, and he took major strides as a defender last year.
Yeah.
Do you see any possibility of Toronto missing the playoffs?
I do, but I think that more so comes because at the deadline they become sellers, right? If they stumble out of the gate and maybe things just don't work out, then they start selling off some of these expirings and Lowry, Gasol, Ibaka. But, I mean, if they keep this core, this has to be a playoff team out of respect. I mean, a lot of people saying without Kawhi, they're not a playoff team. I don't think that's the case. Siakam should get better. OG Anunoby is going to be healthy. You still have Lowry. I don't see this team not being a playoff team. I think those kind of takes are outrageous unless they start becoming sellers.
Yeah, I think unless there's some type of injury bug, which is a possibility with that team, because you do have Gasol and you do have Lowry, and Ibaka's had a couple injuries in the past. But I agree. I think they drop out of being a top four playoff seed, but I still think they're a playoff seed just because of the veteran presence and just the roster they have. They're going to be a really good defensive team. Like, they still have a lot of good defenders on that team. You mentioned OG coming back. They signed Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who's a good defender. They signed Stanley Johnson, who has been a good defender at points, has kind of flashed that in his career. So I think they'll still be a playoff team too.
Yeah. I mean, I probably have them between the 6 and 8 seed range, right?
Yeah. And I would say I'd have them at the 6 to 8 seed range, and there is potential for them to get a little bit higher just because – you know what to expect from Toronto. I think I talked about this maybe on the Brooklyn Buzz, or maybe it was on the outlet, that like Toronto's going to be at a certain point, and if other teams don't handle business and like take care of business in the regular season, they're going to be behind them. But there is the ability for you to jump a team like Toronto because their ceiling just isn't that high with the talent on the roster.
And let's be real. Can we rule out maybe them flipping one of these expirings for a win-now player?
I think it's a possibility. I mean, I think you could probably pair one of these guys with maybe like OG and then trade a couple draft picks moving forward. Who knows? There is cap space because, like you mentioned, a lot of the guys are expiring. So,
yeah, I mean, who knows? Maybe they get in the D'Lo sweepstakes at the deadline. I don't know. We could get crazy.
That would be kind of fun. You'd probably look to move Lowry or maybe in a bigger deal or something like that.
Yeah, get a little bit younger, have Siakam and D'Lo be the duo of the future.
There's been talk about them trying to make a push for Bradley Beal, but I think the assets just aren't there in
Yeah.
comparison to
I don't know what Washington would want out of that.
a more like if you envision Siakam playing more small forward, a possibility would maybe getting a guy like Kevin Love, because you could offer Cleveland expiring contracts in terms of like Serge Ibaka, and then you could throw like OG, or maybe you don't even have to throw him in the deal, and now you have another star type player.
Yeah, and that's another name we should be watching all year is Kevin Love.
Yeah, I pretty much bet that I thought he was going to be traded last year, but I think he didn't get traded a lot because of the injury, and his value
Definitely.
wasn't that high. But if he can maintain his health and like look pretty good on the court, they might be able to move him.
And I think as soon as he does get that health value is when he probably will be moved, if I'm being honest. I just think if you're Cleveland, you kind of see the writing on the wall with this guy.
And you kind of expect Kevin Love to ask for a trade, unless he just doesn't want the pressure, unless he just, is just
But
chilling.
one was good enough for him.
Yeah, he won the championship, and like it is what it is. But he seems like a guy that would probably want a little bit more, at least what we've seen from him in the past.
Yeah. Very
Now,
patient guy, though.
true. Moving over to the West, obviously last year was Golden State, Denver, Portland, Houston, Utah, OKC, San Antonio, and the Clippers. Which team do you see dropping out this year? OKC probably is the lock.
OKC is definitely the lock, and I would give a slight chance to the Spurs dropping out, but not really because it's the
DeJounte
Spurs.
Murray's back this year, and I wouldn't sleep on him.
Yeah, and they brought back Rudy Gay. They lost Marcus Morris, obviously, because of that whole thing. DeRozan's still there.
He's on the
Aldridge is still
block, though.
there.
I've heard it like a lot. That's another name I'd keep an eye on in terms of trades. It seems like San Antonio is just not in love with him. Like, I've heard his name around trade rumors by draft time, and then there was a
Oh,
recent
DeRozan?
report. Yeah, then there was
Yeah.
a re recent report. I want to say last week that talked about DeRozan possibly being traded.
The issue with him is the fact that he's not a very good defender and he can't shoot threes.
Yep.
He's the exact type of guard you don't want. And he also needs the ball in his hand a lot. It's problematic for today's NBA with DeRozan. Not that he doesn't play hard. I think he played the most minutes per game he's ever played last year under Popovich, playing like 36 a game. And he was doing everything. I think his ball handling and playmaking ability was shown at a greater click last year with the Spurs than any year prior. But again, the 3-point shooting, which had kind of grown with that final year in Toronto, once again was a non-factor this past year.
I think the thing with DeRozan is he's best as maybe being your third star instead of being your first or second star.
And he gets paid like a first, second star.
Exactly. And his mindset for his game is more like a first or second star instead of like a third star.
I would
Now,
love to see DeRozan moved, actually.
you say it again?
I would love to see DeRozan moved. I'm not sure where he'd go, but I wouldn't mind seeing DeRozan somewhere else where he's more highlighted and he's not so of place where he doesn't like clash with the offensive system, maybe.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe there's a trade out there for Washington to make with San Antonio, and Bradley Beal is sent to San Antonio, and then you send DeRozan, and you send them obviously young players and assets. But Washington makes a deal because a lot of talk has been about them trading Bradley Beal is that they'll lose like all like relevancy, even though they already have. Like DeRozan, at least is a guy that can kind of keep you relatively competitive in a sense.
DeRozan into Miami. That's not
I
good. That's not a good fit at all.
it's not a good fit, but Miami would probably do something like that just because they're like really star happy. You didn't hear me say that, Jorge. but yeah, what do you think about do you think Portland could possibly fall out, or they're pretty much good to go?
They're not falling out of the playoffs. No way. I'm not putting any disrespect on Lillard or McCollum until I'm shown otherwise, because every year we count those guys out. Voice cracked a little bit. We count those guys out, and
I
even
can
though
really feel the love. I can feel the love for Dame.
they got getting cracked up, even though they got eliminated by the Pelicans in that sweep 2 years ago, they show what they could do last year. They've shown what they do in years past. They're a consistent playoff team. They're a consistent threat. The defense keeps them in it all regular season. I don't see this team falling out of the playoff picture. Do they fall down the standings? Probably. But they're a playoff team.
Yeah, I think they could possibly fall down because they lose a guy like Amino and Harkless, but they'll still probably maintain the playoff push. Ken Bazemore for Evan Turner was a good trade. I think Zach Collins could take a nice jump this year. Hezonja's a guy I really like. They got him on a cheap contract, and that's kind of what we'll talk about next. And then getting Whiteside to just hold you over until Nurkic is back, or even if Nurkic, when he does come back, isn't the same guy, you at least have a competent center. If not, you have Zach Collins on there. So the West is going to be tough because there is, you know, we talked about some teams possibly trying to squeeze into the playoffs. Like the Lakers are going to snatch up OKC spot. It's, you know, if Minnesota or Dallas or New Orleans wants to get in, or Sacramento, they're really going to have to earn it.
Yeah, and I want to say on the Blazers front too, that kid Afernie Simmons or whatever.
Yep.
He looks really good. Like I know that they've been really high on him and everyone was trying to trade for this kid in the offseason. I want to see what he looks like because he's got to have a big time role planned out this upcoming season, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, third guard is pretty important for them because obviously you want to keep that trio heavy. Last year we saw Seth Curry have some really big moments for them. If Afernie Simmons can, you know, pop off during the regular season, that could be a major push. I think Portland deserves some credit, and this is something that's been overlooked, and I probably say I'd overlooked in the past. Maintaining being a playoff team, but still maintaining being a pretty young team. Like Kent Bazemore, still relatively young. I mentioned Mario Hezonja, still relatively young. You know, Simons obviously was a rookie last season. Zach Collins is a guy that could possibly pop off. And there's still some flexibility on that roster too, with a team that could also make a trade possibly for Kevin Love.
Definitely.
Now, what are some low-key veteran minimum signings or just some really cheap deals that you saw this summer that you love? This doesn't have to be factual. This can just be something that you just irrationally like.
I mean, I liked Cousins.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I mean, for having to scramble for plan B role players after missing out on Kawhi, DeMarcus Cousins is as low risk, high reward you can get going for the minimum again. You know, playing with his old teammates in Rondo and Davis, playing with LeBron. I remember a couple years back, there was a lot of talk when they were at their prime in Cousins and Davis, the thought of what would it look like if LeBron was playing with those two guys. Yeah, we're getting it with a lot of injuries later, but I'm a big fan of that signing. I think it was good for the Lakers.
Yeah, I think so too. I think DeMarcus had a cheap deal. And the fact is, like, there's not a ton of pressure for him to be amazing. It's not like he signed with a team and they're expecting him to be an all-star. Like, there's a chance that he's either a starter or he's a backup center, whatever it may be, and he can kind of rehab and get himself good to go. And he's going to be not getting a ton of pressure like we saw last year with Golden State because he's playing with LeBron and AD.
Definitely.
Going with another Lakers signing, and this is just an irrational love, Jared Dudley, I thought was a really good signing for them because of having all these big names in the locker room, a lot of small contract guys, you know, a championship team, a really new team with a lot of new pieces. I think this is the most turnover on a LeBron roster since the first time he was in Cleveland. So bringing in a stabilizer like Jared Dudley will be huge for that locker room.
No, I agree with that 100%. Jared Dudley was a big part of the Nets locker room flip last season. Obviously, they had the bench mob, or not even the bench mob. They had a bench that just loved being on the bench, watching their team play and celebrating. Jared Dudley's great for the locker room and also played some valuable minutes. I mean, he was pretty crucial in that 76ers series, that first round, despite losing. So I think Dudley's a great guy to add for what the Lakers are trying to accomplish this season.
Extremely smart. It'll help guys that aren't maybe getting playing time understand, like, hey, you need to stay on top of yourself so you might be needed down the road. He was a crucial part to helping D'Angelo Russell develop, and he also was a big part with Damari Carroll and Ed Davis having a team-only meeting where they review tape. I would say if Jared Dudley was not on the Nets last year, there's a pretty good chance they don't make the playoffs, and that's not because of his on-the-court impact. That's because of his off-the-court impact.
I think that's fair.
Who else you got?
Now, 2 years, $10 million. It being $5 million, is that minimum enough or no? Is that too much?
Yeah, I think that's fair, depending. Let me hear the deal.
Ed Davis, 2 years, $10
million. Yeah, I was going to go with Ed. So, yeah, I think that's a great deal.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, getting rid of Derek Favors, who was kind of the safety net for Gobert, who does get banged up from time to time. You get a guy like Ed Davis, who we saw with the Brooklyn Nets just be a workhorse. Even with the Portland Trail Blazers, they hated to see him leave. This is a guy who just hustles, plays hard, is fierce around the boards, can do – pretty much similar stuff to Gobert, obviously at a lesser extent, but in the backup role, this is the perfect kind of guy for what Utah wants.
arguably the best rebounder in the NBA statistically. You know, he was like top three in total rebound percentage, defensive rebound, offensive rebound. And the funny thing is, he signed with the Nets last year for around the same amount for 1 year. And a lot of people thought going to this offseason, oh, Ed Davis is going to get some money finally because he's constantly been this really good backup center. And what happens? Utah gets him for a steal. And like you said, just gives him some really nice depth behind Gobert and just another good locker room guy, another guy that his teammates will love.
Yeah, I mean, this was a solid move for the Utah Jazz. This was I mean, looking back at their moves today, when I was looking at who I was going to pick for this, once again, I just love what Utah did.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue they got another guy on the list. They signed Jeff Green for 1 year, $2.5 million.
Like, yeah, you lose Jay Crowder and you get a similar Jay Crowder with some less defense, obviously.
Yeah, less tenacity, but still a solid, versatile, you know, wing to have off the bench slash forward that just gives you some depth that you need because you know there's always going to be injuries throughout the season. I think one guy that probably hasn't got enough love and I think is an interesting player and things just didn't really work out after his rookie season was Minnesota signing Jordan Bell for a minimum deal.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that the Warriors just kind of let him go.
I think there was some backlash between him and the team or him and Steve Kerr because the rookie season went so well and we saw so many flashes, but things never really popped off after that.
Yeah, and I know there were tensions this past year. Obviously, when they were kind of thin in the finals, he still wasn't even getting any minutes.
Yeah, and if he did, it was just like a small stint. So it's like he felt like a guy that proved in the past that he could have an impact.
Yeah, so it's good. It's good that he's out, and who knows what he looks like in the bigger role. This is a guy who's got a pretty freakish athletic ability. Can dunk around the rim. I think he's a decent rebounder. Just what more can he be unlocked in a bigger role?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people his rookie season were like, "How the hell did Chicago give him away for money? Like, this looks like he could be, you know, Draymond Green in the future or something similar." Because we saw him handle the ball in the open court a little bit. You mentioned the athleticism. Showing a decent three-point shot, nothing consistent yet, but there's a chance he could develop in that area too.
Yeah.
I'm going to give the Nets another shout-out. I love the David Nwaba signing for a minimum deal. Just a solid all-around player in terms of he'll give you that hustle. He's a good transition offensive player, good perimeter defender. Jump shot needs some work, but there's enough structure there where you think he could develop further. So getting a guy like that who's a playable NBA player on a minimum deal I always think is a good move.
Yeah, I'm a fan of this signing as well. You know, I'm a fan of a signing when I tweet about the player. And I tweeted about Nwabi. This is a guy who the Pacers had interest in two off seasons in a row. He went to Cleveland last year, the Nets this year. I'm a big fan of Nwabi. Very good perimeter defender. The exact type of defender the Nets need kind of on the perimeter. This is one of the holes they had still to fill. They filled it with Nwabi. Offense, a little bit streaky shooting-wise. Decent corner three-point shooter, if I recall, despite not shooting a lot of attempts. And good in the open floor. So I think Nwabi is a good low-risk, high-reward signing for the Nets who just need to fill out some holes.
And he's a good complementary player, like you said. You know, you can pair him. If you're throwing out a lineup with Kyrie Irving and you want another good defender out there, you got Nwaba. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie, not an amazing defender consistent-wise, has the potential but doesn't always show it. Now you have Nwaba. Or he just gives you versatility because he's a guy that can defend, you know, one through three. And there's some more potential for development, too.
Yeah, and I don't hate it when you put out a lineup where you have someone out there who is only out there to play defense. Like,
yeah.
It's okay to not have someone be an offensive threat. I mean, Tony Allen was kind of that for years in this league. It's nice to have those. Marcus Smart, even to a lesser extent. So Nwabi can be a guy you just plug out there with a lot of scores around him because he can guard the one through three.
Exactly. And then, like you mentioned, the corner three-point shooting, if he can continue to find consistency there, that's all you need. If you can hit, knock down the corner three and you can play good defense, you know, there's a spot for you for the NBA for 10 years.
Definitely.
Anybody else, Corey?
I packaged two guys together for the Milwaukee Bucks. I'm guessing they're both minimum deals. That was Wesley Matthews and Robin Lopez.
Yeah.
I like these moves in particular because you lost Brogdon. You needed to fill up that hole. And I think Wesley Matthews, and obviously you re-signed George Hill, Chris Middleton, and Brooke Lopez. So you got back those three guys, which was big enough as it is. But Wesley Matthews fills the guard hole. Not great at his age. The ruptured Achilles really did take a lot out of his game. Saw that firsthand with the Pacers last year. But still a very good effort defender. Plays his heart out whenever he's out there. Can still hit the three somewhat consistently. And then Robin Lopez, I think he's just a good defender to have. They wanted Pau Gasol for some length and versatility at the center position. They get Robin. I don't think we're going to see much of Brook and Robin on the floor at the same time, but Robin's a very good backup center to have.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited. I'm irrationally excited to see Robin Lopez and Brook on the same team. Robin, I believe, was signed with the room exception. So he's got like $4.7 million, which is a little bit better than the minimum. But I believe Wesley Matthews is the minimum at $2.5 million. Like you said, you know, they actually, I saw a report earlier this week that the Bucks think that Robin can shoot and Robin thinks that he can shoot.
Okay.
So, and I'll say this, Robin has always had a good elbow jump shot. He's had like a little bit of a mid-range game. I'm not saying he's going to turn into Brook in 1 year, but you also have to think about like the twin factor here. And you know how like competitive these guys are, that Robin is going to try to be better than Brook at three-point shooting. It's not saying it's going to happen, but it would be really interesting if all of a sudden we saw Robin Lopez, you know, knock down 34% of his threes this season.
Just no matter what Lopez brothers out there, it's just Splash Mountain.
Yo, I'm telling you, Robin just needs to get the same exact haircut as Brook, and we will not be able to tell which one is on the court other than the numbers. Like, it's a real thing. Like, that's how close they look. And then, like you said, Wesley Matthews, you know, not the same player he was, but a limited role with not as much pressure. You know, you saw last year with the Pacers, probably he tried to do too much, and maybe the Pacers want a little bit more out of him than he could provide. This year, he's strictly just going to be, you know, play some defense to knock down some open threes.
Yeah. No, they definitely, I mean, he was trying to fill Victor Oladipo's shoes in a lot of ways is what we kind of had him fill, especially with Tyreke Evans being so poor last season.
And even prime Wesley Matthews couldn't fill Oladipo's shoes.
Yeah, no, definitely not. But yeah, no, it's solid moves by the Milwaukee Bucks. And then another guy I have on my list is Isaiah Thomas. I just think it's low risk, high reward. I'm still an Isaiah Thomas fan. I mean, if you're the Wizards, you're looking for some sort of fun, maybe some sort of reason to show up to the games besides Bradley Beal. Isaiah Thomas could be that. Obviously, he's on the tour press saying that he feels the best he's felt in a couple of years, and I hope that's the case, and I hope he does get back to playing near his king of the fourth level that he was at. So I didn't hate that signing by the Wizards, who are just looking to get some pieces to be a somewhat competitive franchise.
Yeah, I think it, you know, hopefully he can kind of find somewhat of his former self, and then maybe it helps Washington sell some tickets. And, you know, Bradley Beal would probably like some help in terms of the scoring department. I don't think there's a lot to lose for them there, just because we know what's going on in Washington. They don't even have a GM.
Right.
So it was probably like one of the marketing guys being like, hey, we should sign Isaiah Thomas. We really need to sell some tickets.
Yeah.
But, Corey, I'm going to pass it to you.
Right. So now we're going to do some – just talking about some coaches. Obviously, with the new season upcoming, it's a chance that some coaches may be on their way out. So a team we've already talked about, Oklahoma City Thunder, Billy Donovan.
Yeah.
How safe or unsafe is his job? I'm not even sure what we're going to – how I'm going to – just what's Billy Donovan's future looking like? Should he be sleeping okay at night?
Probably not, you know, just for the fact, that, you know, you're going in there and you're thinking rebuild is the most likely scenario here. Sam Presti, you want to bring in a lot of young guys. Like we talked about, they're hoping to probably move Chris Paul, hoping to move Gallinari and Adams. And then what you want to do is bring in a new head coach. You want to set a new culture. You want to set a new tone and bring in a new system. And no disrespect to Billy Donovan, his system just hasn't been great. Some it's been the roster, and I think some it's been him. You just want a complete fresh start in OKC. If I'm Billy Donovan, I'm probably expecting this to be my last year in OKC.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I'm obviously a big Billy Donovan guy, and I think he just hasn't necessarily had the greatest of rosters at times, especially with the lack of three-point shooting to really generate much offense, because the defense has been good. It did drop off second half of last year. But I would say his seat is lukewarm at this point in time, because generally when you're cleaning house, the coach goes with the house.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't even necessarily mean like even if he does like a pretty good job this year, they just might want to refresh things unless they view him as that player development coach, which they could, because obviously he's a former college coach and there are some ties there. But I think if it's me, I'm trying to go fresh and I'm trying to bring in new players, new coach, set a different tone, because there's still some, you know, guys that are going to be from the past that maybe view Billy Donovan in a negative light, because you heard a lot of stuff in the previous seasons about Westbrook and Paul George trying to do their own thing or setting up the offense the way they want. I think you want to bring in a new coach so he can kind of be set a new tone that's like, all right, I'm in charge. This, you're going to do what I say type of thing.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Next up, Brett Brown. A lot of new faces, but recent struggles somewhat in the playoffs. I know there's a lot of rumors that he was going to get fired following the loss to Toronto, which didn't happen. But how safe is Brett Brown?
You know, if he were to have lost that series against Brooklyn, I think he would have been fired. But he did some really good coaching moves in that series. And then also in the Toronto series, they played really well. I mean, they lost the game winner against arguably the best player in the NBA last season, Kawhi Leonard. So I think his job is safe long as they don't have any major failures in the playoffs. I think this year, if they were to lose in seven to a really good team, you know, like if somehow they got matched up against the Bucks in the second round and they lost, like, I think that's okay, but probably against the other teams that they lost, he might get fired because there's so much pressure on that roster to be really good. And it seems like Philly is going all in because there is some precaution about Joel Embiid's longevity of his career.
Yeah, I'd say it's Eastern Conference Finals or bust.
Unless they lost to the Bucks in the second round. Like, I think that's – if you lose to the Bucks in seven games, like, you can't really be that upset.
I think it's fair. I mean, unless you lose to the Bucks in the second round and you also have, let's say, first round struggles where you go 6 or 7.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Against like a mediocre to bad.
Right. Yeah, like Orlando for, I don't know, a team that you probably shouldn't beat, as you probably should beat in 5 games. Now, this one might be silly, but obviously the Jazz went all in. Quinn Snyder.
Yeah, I'm pretty good on Quinn Snyder. I think he's safe. I think he's done so much without having any big splashy moves. It'd be kind of rash to just fire him after 1 year of like big moves, because obviously he has to incorporate a lot of new pieces. Like Mike Conley and Bogdanovich are big pieces to incorporate into your offense that you haven't necessarily even had those style of players in the past.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I was just trying to see if maybe there was some,
You were trying to get me to buy into the bad take season.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit, maybe. Yeah. Nate McMillan.
I think Nate McMillan's pretty good. I think last year he had a really good season, you know, considering what happened to Oladipo and them maintaining their position.
It's tough. He's a hated guy, just so you know. He's a hated guy among NBA against Pacers Twitter. Like, can't stand him because his offensive scheme goes against the grain.
I could get it in a sense because they don't shoot a lot of threes and maybe they want to get a more modern coach. But I feel like almost this year he's going to have a free pass because Oladipo is going to miss half the season.
Right. I think he got a free pass last – I mean, not a free pass. Obviously, we exceeded expectations after he went hurt, after he went down. But I think even last year he got a free pass.
Yeah. It's like – I don't want to say he benefits from Oladipo getting hurt because he doesn't, but it does make his life less pressure. But if – Oladipo were to come back and he looks pretty good and then he's not doing a good job incorporating all these players into the system, I wouldn't be shocked if he was fired. I don't think he's going to be fired, but it would not shock me if he was fired at the end of next season if the Pacers get knocked out in the first round.
I think that's fair.
Or if they even if they land, like, let's say the Pacers only get an 8 seed, like, he could possibly get fired for that too.
Yeah, I could see that as well. They have to have – it's almost they have to get out of the first round this upcoming year.
And like, let's be honest, like, it's kind of hard for them because of, you know, who they could possibly match up with or Oladipo not being that guy yet. Like, there's a chance he doesn't play at the same level that we saw from last year, and that's no shot at him. It just takes a while to get back from a major injury.
Yeah, because if they don't make it out of the first round next year, that'll be 4 straight years of being ousted in the first round.
Damn.
Right, and that would all be under the Nate McMillan tenure. And if you look at Nate McMillan's, like, record as a head coach, I'm pretty sure, don't quote me on this, but, like, 8 out of his last 9 years, he's been out in the first round, that he's been in the playoffs.
And I will say one series where I feel like they should have won, and, like, I really wish that they won, was when they when they faced Cleveland. Like, he just didn't make the proper adjustments because they just, like, zoned in on Oladipo so hard body that he couldn't do anything. Yep. And they got a couple wins just because they eliminated Oladipo.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I think, games 2 and 3 where Oladipo was pretty much a non-factor after having a really big game 1. The Pacers couldn't figure it out. No, I would agree with that. Next up, Brad Stevens? Is there a chance that Boston grows tired of their god?
That's an interesting theory because I think last year he didn't get enough blame for what went wrong in Boston.
He got a free pass because of Kyrie being just so out there. It almost was like, well, this guy's just too crazy for it to be Brad Stevens' fault.
It literally was like the Boston media just created a narrative that it was all Kyrie.
Yeah.
Like they just made it seem like, oh, Kyrie is the whole reason this team works. Like let's put this to sleep. Like Kyrie, as bad as a locker room guy he could be, like he's not ruining the entire team. It's more than one person. And then Jackie McMullen came out with an article for ESPN talking about Kyrie wasn't the only guy that wasn't happy. Like there was other players on the team that were upset that Gordon Hayward was getting so many minutes and playing such a big role when he wasn't playing at the level they needed him to be, especially with other guys like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum playing so well the previous year. There was also talk about the there not being a ton of accountability where guys were going out and partying on back-to-backs. Like Brad Stevens is comes off as a somewhat of as a passive guy, and I think they probably needed him to be a little bit more aggressive last year and to be more of a leader. Now, that's not to say that I think he's a bad coach or anything like that. I think every coach has areas they need to work on or weaknesses, but I don't think he's as crazy as they made him seem in the previous seasons.
No, it was definitely a collaboration of things. I think you're 100% right. It was not just Kyrie. The thing came out that Jalen obviously wasn't a fan of Kyrie. That's true. So you had players not liking each other. Terry Rozier upset with a role. The team upset about Gordon Hayward being spoon-fed plays they felt at times, which also feels like Marcus Morris, probably the guy who's the most upset about Gordon Hayward getting minutes. And then I heard the partying on back-to-back nights. It's a collaboration of everything, no doubt. And when
Marcus
you're that,
Morris and like Jaylen Brown were fighting on the bench one night, right?
right? Just the Pacers.
Yeah.
No, this was definitely a team that just had some turmoil, and Brad Stevens has to have some blame for it. When you are the face of the team, or not the face, you are the face of the team. You're the guy who leads these guys onto the court every night.
People are literally saying like, "Oh, would you take any player over Brad Stevens?" And that was just like the most ludicrous comment to make. Like, he's a good coach, but he's not at that level. He hasn't done anything really in the playoffs.
No, he's very good at coaching guys who don't have an ego. But those teams that don't have egos generally have a ceiling because most star players have an ego. It's that simple. Like, I mean, maybe not all of them. Tim Duncan maybe doesn't have an ego, but he hasn't been able to handle big time superstar talent that really puts you into the situation to win titles. And last year was the first team that he had that true opportunity with, and it didn't work out. Now he's got a bunch of young guys again, and there's less pressure. So this will be another good test for Brad Stevens. But again, he's got to be able to coach the stars, I think, is going to be the biggest question mark.
And I know people take the comment I just said about he's never done anything in the playoffs. Like, yeah, he's been to the Eastern Conference Finals, but I've been on here before and I said that was probably like one of the weakest Eastern Conference playoffs you've ever seen because they beat Philadelphia, but that was more about Philadelphia collapsing than them really beating them. So I'll still, go with that him not really doing anything crazy in the playoffs. Like they beat the Pacers this year, but when they faced Milwaukee cooked them, and talent-wise, they weren't that far off from where Milwaukee is. Like, there's a lot of talent on Boston. They just weren't able to get everything in the in a groove.
Yeah, no, it's and groove is important.
Exactly. And I think like I don't think he'll be fired unless for some reason they were to miss the playoffs, which I don't think is likely. I think he's good to go and they'll probably keep him for the foreseeable future.
I would agree.
Anybody else?
No, that's it for the coaches. I wanted to throw Frank Vogel in, but I think that's just rude.
Yeah, I think it is kind of rude, but I think it is kind of possible. He
Yeah,
could.
it depends on how on what you think about the Jason Kidd signing. Was it really just smoke screen because they didn't want to hire me the head coach because of the domestic allegations and everything else? Was it their way of getting around the system? Maybe, but time will tell.
Yeah, I think, that's a real possibility, the Jason Kidd thing. And then also any LeBron team, any Laker team just has an irrational amount of pressure where it's like, oh God, if you're not like winning every night, maybe we should fire this coach. Other than that, I'm trying to think if there's anybody else I think that could possibly end up getting fired. Not really. I think a lot of the coaches are in good shape based off of what they did the previous season. So
Yeah, I
it'll be
think
interesting. I know it'll probably change by the time we get to the middle of the year because somebody will let us down. But as of right now, I think we pretty much covered all the names.
I would agree. Yeah, just those four or five.
All right. Well, that wraps it up. As always, a pleasure, Corey. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You can check us out iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. And like we mentioned, probably moving on from here, we'll do about one show a week until we get to the preview series.
Peace out, knuckleheads.